Hare Krishna. Okay, so today we're just going to try to make a humble attempt to glorify a very nice devotee of Srila Prabhupada and, of course, Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, Gauri Dasi. It's always nice to glorify a sincere servant of Srila Prabhupada's mission in Krishna consciousness, and Gauri Dasi definitely was that type of individual. There are some new people here today, so I'll just say a few things that I've said for the last 25 years. But we tend to forget about them anyway. We forget them, you know, isn't it? I myself forget them until we come to this particular day, and then I somehow remember a few things here and there. But sooner or later we should write them down, because we are getting to be senior citizens, so it's a little harder to remember things. But in our attempt to glorify Gauri Dasi, it's not artificial by any means or embellishment, but she was a very wonderful devotee, very sincere and dedicated to Srila Prabhupada's mission, especially in preaching. But she was actually an all-around devotee. She could do anything. She could cook, she could do deity worship, pujari work, artist, you know, book distributor, preacher. Very innovative in her desire to spread Krishna consciousness. I probably didn't say this before, but she was very innovative in trying to set up book tables at the DMVs, you know, over here where they have, you get your driver's license, stuff like that. So she was very innovative in developing placards that she would take her book table out, and she would set it up and have all these things on reincarnation, Krishna consciousness, chanting. And in those days, it was very, very few devotees even thought about doing things like that. But she was very innovative when it came to, like, the preaching aspects of Krishna consciousness. She also was very keen on prasadam distribution. Here in L.A., she did help out on many occasions in trying to develop a prasadam program next door in this house that we have here, 3752. They had a dinner program. And that dinner program was managed in the beginning days by Bhagavata Kinchana and his wife, Divyadrishti Dasi. And she was very innovative in helping that aspect of it also. She was involved in that. So she was an all-around devotee who actually wanted to do a lot of things. And she really didn't ever ask for a position. It's not like these days, if someone, you know, doesn't have a position, they don't want to be responsible for anything. You know, it's a rare quality in a person who just wants to serve, who doesn't need a title or a position in order to serve. And I think that Gauri Dasi exhibited that aspect of Krishna consciousness. She never demanded to be in charge, at least as far as I know. Maybe that was just her character. It was that she was very forthcoming, very determined to be involved. And that was very nice, because a lot of times it's rare to have a person who really exhibits leadership qualities, who is self-motivated, self-starter, who is very determined and fixed and focused on their service. And she definitely had that quality. Most of us are just followers. We like to just be told what to do. And if we're not told something, then we just want to go to our room and put on our earphones or take a nap. So it's a very rare situation where you find someone who's self-motivated and wants to do something with themselves in order to push on this mission of Krishna consciousness. So those individuals stand out. Where everybody, we see that most of us, we like to just blend in. You know, like if you have a flower arrangement, you want to just blend in into that flower arrangement. You don't want to be out of that arrangement. Oh, so our tendency is to kind of like blend in. You know, don't let anybody see me. Or, you know, if they do, then duck into the, you know, over here, and so that nobody asks us to do any kind of service. This is our tendency. And that's why she stood out, because that was not her tendency. And sometimes these individuals are misunderstood because they're very forceful in their ways, and sometimes devotees misinterpret their intentions. They think that they're trying to develop some kind of self-aggrandizement, or they want some position, or they want some power. Everybody wants that to a certain degree. But it's a very rare person who's self-motivated and accomplishes something and doesn't create a lot of disturbance. That's very done very intelligently. So this was Gauri Dasi. She used to travel around the country a lot, helping other devotees preach, learn how to distribute Prabhupada's books. She was an accomplished artist. She would do that in her so-called spare time. And by her sincere dedication and her devotion, she is being glorified here today. This is why we're here. And of course, Radha Govinda, these are her deities, the devotees. When she was in her last days, months I should say, they purchased these nice Radha Govinda deities for her. And they were with her all the way to the end. We are very fortunate that we are, my wife especially, was very good friends with Gauri Dasi. And so she requested us to take care of them. So in her memory, we want to like bring Radha Govinda here every year and try to have all of you see her Radha Govinda that we've been very fortunate enough to serve for the last so many years, 25, 26 years. And we should see her in light of being a very sincere soul in helping Srila Prabhupada in his mission. Just like all of us here, we have this great opportunity also. It's not that this is something just for a particular individual, but it's for all of us to take example of a person who has really dedicated her lives. And in fact, she was very fortunate. I feel she was very fortunate that she was able to leave this world in the height of her Krishna conscious desire, because it's a long haul, you know. It's a long haul. It's although life is short in many ways, but to be absorbed and really give all that you have is really a test of one's determination and focus and devotion in anything that we do. If you just take something in the material world, if somebody's been doing something in the material world for, you know, 30, 40 years, we tend to think, wow, amazing. How did you last? How could you possibly do that for all those years? And in her case, she was able to give everything she had. And, of course, she left this world a little bit prematurely, you might say, young. I think she was just in her 40s. We think that's young, very young. She was very fortunate to have that opportunity. She died very nicely in Vrindavan Dham. She went there to leave this world when most of us would just dread the thought of going there. There was no air conditioning. Barely there was a fan that worked. The electricity would be turned off certain points of the day. You can imagine this is June. If you've ever been in India in June, it's just recently we read an article where in Delhi alone, in the last several days, was 125 degrees. And this is the temperature there. Can you imagine? And you're suffering like anything just because the body is shutting down. And then tack on 125 degrees. They had to wet the sheets on her bed in order to keep her somewhat comfortable, if that's the word I could use. Maybe comfortable. But the sheets would like dry up in no time, and they had to constantly be doing that in order for her to feel any kind of comfort. So we can't even imagine the kind of suffering that she went through. And painkillers? No, she didn't have painkillers. It was incredible, and she stuck it out and was able to leave this planet and hopefully go back home, back to Godhead. So. She deserves it, and we could give a little bit of offering for her and remember her as one of the saints of New Dwarka Dham, Ki Jai, which she definitely was, in my opinion, in her activities of Krishna consciousness. So, anybody else? We'll talk a few eulogies here about her, and then we'll just have a CD that we play every year. You have to kind of listen to it. It's kind of, the audio is not so hot. It's not clear. It was just a darshan kind of thing, interaction in a room about book distribution. This is what she was really very famous for. So it's very befitting that we hear something from her about book distribution. But then after that, we'll have a great feast in her honor. And boy, you can't wait till you see the prasadam today. Really good. So anybody else like to say a few words? Whatever we can hear from anybody, you know, we'll go around the table here for several minutes, and then we can do the tape, and then we can take Krishna Prasad.
I remember Mother Gauri. When I was 17, I joined the Brooklyn Temple, and after a few months, I had to go back home to finish high school. And when I turned 18, I ran into Gauri distributing incense and BTGs in the street. And she greeted me, and she brought me back to the Brooklyn Temple. And we were on the subway, and she was preaching to me. And in between preaching, she would be chanting Hare Krishna. And it was a great way to make me feel comfortable going back to the temple. I was real excited to go back to the temple because I wanted to be a devotee, and I couldn't wait to turn 18. And Gauri was nurturing me so nicely because I needed to hear the Hare Krishna mantra. My first service was at ISKCON Press, and I assisted Balai, Mamata, and other devotees typing Srila Prabhupada's dictaphone, Srimad Bhagavatam. And I would sneak into the art department where Gauri used to paint the original BBT paintings, and Gauri would take the time to explain to me the paintings. Like when they started paintings, the canvas was almost bare, and she would say, this is where Krishna would be, and this is where Radha would be. And she would even read to me letters. The artist would write letters to Srila Prabhupada to ask questions, how Jai Sri Radha Govinda, how to draw the paintings. So Gauri was very nurturing, and she was very austere. Her schedule at the art department was very, very long each day. Sometimes she would stay up late at night chanting her rounds, finishing her rounds. And she oftentimes had a delicate preaching sense. She was very, very kind. She was very, very caring and loving. And she liked to go out to preach and go out on Harinam and distribute BTGs. I am grateful for her because she helped me a lot in the early days. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I had a little association with Mother Gauri, and also in Brooklyn, early 70s. I was, she's a senior devotee to me. She joined, I think, in 71 or 70 or something like that, a few years before me. But so she was, when I joined, she was already working at the as an artist and as a book distributor. And to be honest with you, I mean, I was always impressed by her, like, sincerity and determination, but I don't remember her. Oh, she wasn't, like, a particularly good artist in the sense that, you know, she wasn't like Jadarani, who is, you know, very accomplished. And or as a book distributor, she wasn't one of the big book distributors in terms of, like, scores, number of books distributed or anything like that. But I remember it as, you know, being very, very sincere. You know, she very surrendered, working very hard. You could see she was voluntarily accepting a lot of inconvenience to just do a service. And then I left New York in 1978. I went to Australia. I didn't, you know, I've lost touch with her or hearing about her, and as well as every, you know, all the other devotees that I knew there. But then I think it was like in the mid-80s. When did she actually pass away? 80? Anyway. But sometime in like the mid-80s, I can't remember exact which year it was, but then I, you know, started hearing about, oh, Gauri Devadasi was doing, you know, she was in Los Angeles, and she was like a very empowered book distributor and doing a lot of books and leading up, inspiring all the, you know, the other women to go out and distribute books. And I was thinking, is that the same person? And of course it was. And it just really struck me that, like, wow, this process works, because here was somebody who was, you know, like, sincere and working hard, but not doing, not like result-wise, nothing very impressive, but because she stuck at it. You know, she was very determined and very surrendered and very sincere, and apparently Krishna really empowered her. And I was, you know, I was surprised. I mean, very glad, but at the same time surprised to hear that, wow, Mother Gauri has become an empowered book distributor. So that was really, that was the thing that kind of struck me, you know, and that I remember about her most, that she sort of went from, I don't say not an advanced devotee, but she's an example of somebody who Krishna empowered as a result of Satesham Satadiyuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhyogam Tamyenam Ampantate. She was constantly devoted. She had the right devotional attitude, and Krishna just, you know, decided to progressively use her more and more as an instrument as time went on. So that's the main thing I remember about her. I was also with her on the day when she distributed, I can't remember how many, but she distributed something like 100 Krishna books in Newark Airport. One right around the Christmas marathon, I think it was 1973 or 74. I happened to be also there that day. That was pretty amazing. I distributed about 10 books. But she just was, you know, what happened was, it was, we went to Newark Airport, and it was a storm. So all the flights were canceled or delayed. And there's a lot of military personnel there stuck in the airport. And she just had the right attitude. She had a heyday. She distributed like 100 Krishna books. She just, practically every soldier you saw walking around the airport was walking around with a Krishna book. So, the big ones, right, yeah. So that was one amazing thing I remember about her. I was there on that day as well. Mother Gauri Ki Jai.
One story Mother Gauri used to like to tell to the Sankirtan devotees as an example of how much Srila Prabhupada loved book distribution was she was engaged in the Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon. She had been asked to paint the paintings for Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there were 10 or 15 artists, but they had to get all the paintings done in 2 months because Prabhupada had asked that. That was that famous story where Rameshwar said, well, that's impossible, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So they set to work on that marathon, and they would paint all day, and then someone would come and replace the painter in the evening, and it was a 24/7 around-the-clock marathon to paint all the paintings. So Gauri was really absorbed in that. And then Prabhupada came from the East Coast. She hadn't seen him since those days, and she'd just come here and... she wasn't distributing books at the time. And there was a meeting up in Prabhupada's quarters, and all the devotees gathered around Srila Prabhupada, including the heads of the departments, all different ones, to make their reports. And Gauri wanted to go and see Prabhupada. She hadn't seen him in some time, a few years, I guess, or a couple of years. So she snuck up there, and she found a little space near Srila Prabhupada, and she actually sat down right near him. And she watched everyone, and she saw everyone making their reports, and he was observing and listening, but he was very grave, and she saw a different mood in him than she'd seen previously. He was more serious and more concerned with management, and she felt very sad because she thought that he doesn't seem as blissful as previously, and she was very concerned. And each department manager made their statement, and he listened soberly. And then when it was brought to him the scores of the book distribution, and he listened to the scores, he smiled from ear to ear, and he gave this oceanic smile, and she described it that the whole room lit up, and everyone became blissful at that time, and it became light. And she realized once again that the false ego that caused her to want to be a painter and want to do all the artistic thing and be so absorbed in that persona, she should just let that melt away and start going out in book distribution again. So I thought that was a good story.
I was very fortunate to be distributing books with Mother Gauri side by side. And I consider that to be like a very, very good for a new person who just recently joined Krishna consciousness, because sometimes, you know, we read the books and we think, yeah, we're not the soul, we're not the body, we're the soul. But to actually see a person practicing the philosophy right in front of you with that conviction and maturity inspires a younger devotee to pursue Krishna consciousness. So I was appreciating from her a few things, compassion, because she was wearing white also that time. She looked like a mother, and going to all these different places, she could be seen even from far away because nobody will wear white cloth. And then, yeah, she's a mother. And I was feeling like she's my mother. I'm like protected because I'm new here. I'm bewildered and confused. I wasn't really like very strong in that. So she will notice that on me, and she will come back in her break time. This was at the airport. And she will say, you know, these people here, they're one step to go to the hellish planets. And you have the opportunity to assist and help Lord Chaitanya's movement and Prabhupada to distribute these books. So don't hesitate. And especially because he would see me talking to some simple people like Spanish people. I was amazed how she will approach anyone, businessmen and people who will never stop if I will call them. But she was very serious, very determined, convinced. And this is what I like about her. I said, wow, I feel good that somebody understands the philosophy, practices, and it's very inspiring to be close to a person like that. And another thing was that, I don't know if I finished. So she said, you know, don't think that you're doing this for you, because I was having a difficulty to ask for money. I could give the book, but I cannot ask for money because being in Mexico, we never had that. In Mexico, you'll never see people asking for money in the street. Even if you're very poor, people are very responsible to work hard, even if you don't have money, but you never ask money. You never see people begging like that. I mean, at least in my times, I'm talking about 50, 60 years ago. So then I was like, how am I going to ask for money? This is not for you. This is for Krishna. And they go, oh, yeah, this is for Krishna. Good, that makes me feel good. Yeah, that's right. It's like you're begging for Krishna, not for you. So then I thought, okay, I'll try it. So, but seeing her was like very inspiring, you know, like for a new devotee. So you're close to a person like that. You feel very protected and good. Another time was that there was a big festival here in they call the Ellis Street Festival in Los Angeles. Huge festival. Thousands of people will come. And at one point that festival become very disturbing for the whole city, that all the police will come and raid the people because they were some crazy gangs. They're fighting right in the street. I saw many fights there. So they stopped the festival. But one day we were a team of maybe 25 or 30 devotees there going, men and women, fundraising without no books, just fundraising, doing some little flowers or something. And then suddenly I was looking at a few persons passing by with Bhagavad Gitas, and I go, what's that? Bhagavad Gitas? Who's doing that? And then later on, like in half an hour, another Bhagavad Gita. And then and later on, another one. And I was like, who's doing that? But I was amazed because these people, you know, here they, how can they get Bhagavad Gitas the way, you know, they were holding their girlfriend like this, eating meat like this, and a beer in the hand. And I was thinking, how, somebody's very compassionate here. And then I looked far away and I saw the white clothes. That was Mother Gauri. I think, oh, this is very nice. I wish I could be doing that. But I was ordered to, we were ordered to do something else at that time. So, yeah, she had a lot of determination. She had compassion. And for me, I consider that a great fortune to be close to a person like that. And I always remember her like that. My association was book distribution. And once in a while, she would get together to organize here with the women. She was like the general, always like going and making plans where to go, what to do for spreading Krishna consciousness. She would call me over and she says, "We the women are going to go to do this event. Just please tell me and let me know where the men are going to go. So we have to work out together." And she has like a strategic plan of doing this and that. And so wonderful. So Mother Gauri Dasi Ki Jai.
Come here. Come here, please. Come here. Have a seat. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I was doing book distribution in the airport in Denver with Mother Nidra and Mother Vrindavan Velasini, and we were being harassed by some religious Pentecostal group. And so we had to be sent. So Voss sent us to Los Angeles to do the airport here. And I loved the Denver airport. I was so at home. It was so comfortable, and you could approach anybody and everybody. And we were there many hours every day. And then we got sent to L.A. and New York, and we were very – he promised we would only be there a month. We'd be back home in a month. So we went to the airport, and we were doing United, and it was the terminal that nobody wanted to do, and it was very difficult, and it was just all businessmen. And we were having to, like, take pictures and document. We were being harassed there, too, by the businessmen and the workers. So then I got to go to International with Mother Gauri. And in the meantime, Nidra got sent home, and somehow it was over a month, and I was still in New Dwarka, and I was struggling. I just really missed being in Denver with the deities and the devotees. So we were doing the international terminal together, and for some reason, Gauri really picked up. I was working with her, and she really picked up on the fact that I was struggling. So she sat me down at the lockers. We're sitting there in our silk saris, and we're sitting here at the lockers, and we sat there for hours. And she just kindly preached to me and helped me to just be at home in New Dwarka and surrender to the circumstances that I was dealing with. And she just made such an impact on me. I ended up being in New Dwarka for 6 months, and I was okay. I was at home. It was going to be okay. Just because she took that, you know, valuable Sankirtan time, and we just sat there on the floor at the lockers. So I'm very, very grateful to Mother Gauri.
Hare Krishna. During the Prabhupada Festival, I think it was Bhargava who told a story that Chipurari and some other big distributor went to Prabhupada and asked that they wanted permission to travel around the society and teach the devotees how to distribute books. Mainly in those days, they were thinking how to teach them lines. This is the line that you say. And Prabhupada said no. He said if the devotee is sincere, the super soul will provide them with the right approach, for themselves. It's not that everybody has to use the same approach. So Gauri exemplified that. She didn't try to copy this big distributor or that big distributor. She had her own way of dealing with people. And her way, as you will hear in some discussion on the tape that we're going to play, the CD, is that she would analyze each person in an instant, you know, where they were at. Not just that here's a businessman wearing a suit and tie. She would really kind of see who is this person and where they're situated, and just immediately approach them in that mood. And so they would feel almost in an instant, they would feel some rapport with her. And she would, and so I'm just saying that because all of us who don't go out all the time, when we do go out, you're a little hesitant, you know, how am I going to approach this person, that person? But we should always remember that you're an individual and you're approaching an individual. And trust the super soul to give you the right individual approach for that person. It was also reinforced another time I went to a Sankirtan meeting in Europe. And Manidhar, you may know Manidhar, he was also telling the story how such a vast difference in approach. Some devotees are very bold. They will go up to a 6'6" guy and slap him on the back and say, "Hey, how you doing? And, you know, here's the book." And, you know, and another person he was saying, I was remembering one girl who was so shy, she would like show the book, and if the person didn't immediately take interest, she would move away. And inevitably, the person became interested because she was like that. What are you hiding? Show me that book. So everybody has to find their own individual way of distributing the books. It's not that you're just going to learn a formula and then the formula is going to work. So Gauri exemplified that. I mean, I was fortunate to be out with her in New York. And you remember in those days, you know, the Henry Street days, 73, 74, it was not just that people weren't friendly. They were downright hostile. The neighborhood that we lived in, the temple got attacked. It was mostly Italians and they hated us. They hated us. We were like foreign, you know, trash to them. What are you doing in our neighborhood? So they actually attacked the temple. Brigham, you remember. We had to like close all the doors and windows. Some devotee was saying, boil some oil and throw it up. It was really, really a heavy situation. So to go out in that situation in New York and approach people individually was not easy. But she had that talent. So I watched her. We were in front of Penn Station. And I also worked at the press. That was my main service. So I didn't go out a lot, but you know, when things were a little slow, they would send us out with the book distributors in. And she was just fearless. She, like I said, in an instant, she would figure out where this person was at. And she would just approach them very calmly, very quietly. Not, "Hey, here I am." No, very calmly, very sweetly. And find a way to connect with that person instantly. So that's the main thing that I took away from having some contact with Gauri. Hare Krishna. So we're going to play the CD now. And if there's time permitting at the end, if anybody else wants to say anything.
I started distributing the books in probably 1971 or 72 in New York City, actually in Port Authority. And at that time we were distributing big Bhagavad Gita books directly by going up to people, shaking their hands, introducing ourselves and presenting the books. Just the way we, practically speaking, the way we do it now. Very pure approach. And we, at that time, experienced so much satisfaction and reciprocation from the conditioned souls. We actually learned very quickly that not only people were interested, but they were fascinated by Prabhupada's books when we began to really preach about them. That we soon became so enthusiastic that we had a big selection of books that we kept in the lockers of Port Authority, as well as pictures of the temple and deities, fish line, beads for chain and japa. And all these we would also introduce if we found somebody very interested.
Right on Sankirtan.
We would send people away with 10 books and a perfume bag and some prasadam and everything all at once. And one fast forward time became, many of them later became devotees actually. these people that we were preaching to in those days. We used to distribute books both quickly and efficiently, as we still do now. And then when we would follow somebody very receptively, we would spend much longer preaching, and we would try to give them many books and receive, and try to get them to give as big a donation as possible. And in those days, we were, because of the temple situation, we had to actually average something like $10 each for each big book we sold. So we were also still doing a lot of big books every day.
How did
we do? Well, I think we were averaging $200 to $300 a day in terms of lotteries, and we were definitely doing a few books, you know, 20 to 30 books at least. And then when you were aware of the rate of $5 a book, then we started really doing a lot of books. But our emphasis was always on doing distributing books and preaching and making devotees. We saw no difference in distributing the books and making devotees. We really saw them as one and the same thing, that this was the process of making devotees. Of course, we were a little overzealous and thinking perhaps oversimplifying the process of making devotees. In those days, many devotees came simply on the basis of getting the new book and real association with the devotee. Now, it seems that sometimes it requires more of a cultivation program for people to become convinced to actually move into the temple, simply because the times have changed. There are some of the young people that are as free-willing as they were in the 60s and the early 70s as hippies. They had already renounced a lot of material possessions, and was much more easy for them to accept something like this, immediately see the value of it, and want to try to move in and try it out. So it was like so many people came like that, actually, because they were really burned out in the material world. Whereas today, most of the young people we meet are going to college, they're seriously trying to engage in some career, and then when we preach to them, they become attracted naturally by the books, but they don't necessarily immediately see how they can extricate themselves from their present situation because they're so involved and they're relatively comfortable. They're not suffering a great deal. They haven't rejected the material education that they're getting and the material standard of working in the material world, which we had done already. So there's, in that sense, there's a difference. So we now have all these follow-up cultivation programs to go along with our book distribution, like a book program, to graduate like devotees. That's really how I saw it. There's a cultivation program now to back up the book distribution so that these people will gradually become devotees or at least become involved in ISKCON, tied and fit into ISKCON permanently, more or less, hopefully. Because every contact that we make on Sankirtan from the Sankirtan devotee requires so much surrender and so much dedication, so much energy actually to engage that soul who is completely bewildered by noise of ignorance, passion, totally uninterested pretty much. Most of the people we meet are, I mean at least, are coming from, they've never been introduced to any kind of spiritual concept, practically speaking. They have no idea whatsoever of any alternative to material consciousness and material, the food of life, which is what they're engaging in. So therefore, when we meet them, book distribution to me is a matter of convincing somebody in a matter of seconds that what you're offering them, this book that you're offering them, is going to give them something completely different than they've ever been offered before. Something totally new that they never had an opportunity to hear about or see before, which is going to give them qualities in their personality, qualities in their characters, in their character, develop their character, qualities in their emotional experience, and qualities in their intellectual experience, and ultimately pure spiritual experiences that they can't achieve in any other way. And I don't present this as so much as a religion, but as a great science, which has been handed down for thousands and thousands of years, and which in this materialistic Western culture is totally unknown. And people become very interested. I find people become very interested when it's presented in this way, because here they are in the midst of their material work, working very, very hard. For the most part, most of the people I meet are highly passionate workers, totally free workers, totally absorbed, working, running to some place to get back to their job, or running some place to do something. And they're totally absorbed in simply making money and maintaining their family members and paying their car payments off and their rent off. And they're totally involved, completely. They're so tied up in their situation. It's just like a cocoon. They're in a cocoon. And they're really devoting these days. We have to be so concentrate somehow and be so in tune with that cocoon that they're in. And we have to recognize what it is and see that we have to present these books in such a way that they, for a minute, forget all these entanglements, at least, while they're talking to us. We can so attract them that they can actually forget their mental platform. All these things that are worrying them, that they're completely tied up with. I have this appointment, and this money is going for this, and this money is going for that, and I have to see my psychiatrist in a few minutes, and I haven't got time in the first place, and who the heck are you anyway, and what are your credentials, and what is this you're giving me?
So where do you get the intelligence to actually cut through and actually present Krishna in such a way that they become attractive?
Well, most of it comes from having an intense desire and eagerness and enthusiasm. I find that you have to be extremely enthusiastic, because they're extremely enthusiastic for their creative activity. This creative activity is requires a lot of enthusiasm. These people are performing in steroids, they're working very hard. These are the people that we're going to reach, actually, because they're a little bit, bewildered as people that are easier. Sometimes we meet people that are moving a little slower, but they're also going to be slower to read the books and slower to catch on to what the books are saying in most cases, because they're so much under the influence of intoxication and laziness and inertia. You know, they're so much under the influence of ignorance. So most of the people that I meet at the DMVs are very passionate. And I think at the airport that's true too. So I think the younger devotees, the principal difficulty they have is learning how to become intense enough to stop somebody and actually concentrate and clear-headed enough to think of how to engage each individual soul, because everybody's completely different. And you can't do this mechanically at all. You have to actually analyze this person and see in a few seconds, what is his situation? Where is it coming from? What are the modes of nature that are influencing him even? And how am I going to then immediately know, instinctively, through experience and through Krishna's advice to you, how you can deal with such a person and become, to attract them? And a good distributor attracts a person in so many different ways. They'll first try to attract them to the book, because the first thing you do is you hand them the book. Here's the passing out 500 today. This is a special a book that we're giving out to people in the neighborhood today. I'd like to have you take a look at it. But then if the guy says, listen, I'm not into religion, I'm not into meditation, I'm not at all interested in anything that has to, this book is not for me, then you have to start on some other platform. What will you do, sir? Do you have a family? You have to start from some other angle completely, until he's totally forgotten about the fact that he's still holding the book. And then we come back to the book. There are so many different things that you have to do with each individual person. But I find that it doesn't have anything to do with how disinterested they are, or how much in mind they are, or how far away from Krishna consciousness they are, because practically 99% of the people I talk to at the DMVs and at the airport are so far away, they couldn't be any farther away if they tried. You know, they couldn't be more forgetful of Krishna if they wanted to be. It's incredible.
How?
You know what I mean? They're just really out of it, totally. So it's really the devotee's intense desire and enthusiasm. But that enthusiasm, first of all, it stops them. They can't figure out where you're coming from, what you're trying to do to them. I mean, you're totally, yes. And they can see, they can recognize on some level, the soul recognizes some purity. I think the soul responds to the purity of the devotee. And the devotee may not talk about Krishna right away or God right away. It depends very much on the situation. So it isn't purity in the sense that you're preaching directly, necessarily, but simply that your friendliness isn't, it has no motivation. It's not, you're not hustling them for anything. And if in fact you aren't being friendly and thinking of them in terms of a number, either a number of Lakshmi points or a number of book points, then that really gets communicated to them on some level.
How do you keep your mind fixed on that platform of not being fruited for either Lakshmi or books?
Because engaging the soul, just stopping each person, is so absorbing and so fascinating. Each individual soul is so different. And to engage them is such a challenge. It's an incredible challenge. It's like, I'm not saying it's difficult. Anybody can learn to do it. I'm convinced anybody can learn this art. Prabhupada said that. But it is very difficult because it requires total concentration and total commitment. You have to be absorbed in running the soul to be engaged. Your mind can't be anywhere else. You can't be thinking of anything else. You can't hold back anything from Krishna. You have to really give yourself to this person. Let's really give yourself to this soul. And in the process of doing that, you're also giving yourself to Krishna. You're praying to Krishna on behalf of this soul. That somehow or other they can... It's not even a conscious prayer for me, because it's such a juggle just to talk to the person. It takes so much energy and so much concentration to try to strike up some kind of an interesting conversation that will either interest them from their intellectual point of view, or joke with them if they're not, you know, everybody's different. So you have to be able to be like a chameleon and change your personality according to the, not your personality, but your, externally, you change your approach. I do anyway. I either joke, or I make me very grave and serious, or I maybe lord it over some people. Some people I'll be extremely humble with and simply glorify them and praise them. One of them, I remember, came out of the day and met with his friend, and he didn't tell me, but I could just have a sense about him. And he had a very proud feeling, a very puffed up feeling that he was very advanced spiritually. So immediately I approached him and I said something about how I could tell by his eyes that he was very deep and thoughtful, and I wanted to meet him, and I just introduced myself. And I said, I really want to give you one of these books because I can see that you're a person that really is very deeply involved in spiritual cultivation of knowledge. And he said, how could you tell? Oh, well, he said, you're right. Now, we people like us can tell each other. We can always tell each other. We're all like this, you know. And he did all the talking. He preached to me. And then he gave me $5 for the book. And he left. He was a Christian, you know, a complete Christian. But because he was so pleased with how I presented myself to him and encouraged in his own commitment to spiritual life, I said a few things about the book, but I didn't say very much. Just that it's a great spiritual classic, and he knew he would enjoy it. He was convinced he would really appreciate it. But had I approached him in a different way, he never would have stopped for me. So that's what I'm saying. It's a very intuitive thing. and all intuition comes from Krishna, and only Krishna can give that cleverness, and it takes a lot of practice of going out day after day and just doing it. And a lot of times you're going to get a lot of no's, because you're not going to be right on. And you can understand those no's, not that Krishna isn't causing those no's to happen, but that you should think yourself that I'm still not giving everything to Krishna. I'm still not really praying hard enough. I'm not surrendering hard enough, and I'm not desiring hard enough. Because ultimately you realize that anyone can be made to take a book. It's not that we can do it, but you'll at least have that realization that anyone can take one of these books and get something if they have the money, or at least appreciate the book on some level. If the devotee is sufficiently fired up and determined. I don't mean determined in a passionate, pushy way at all. I mean in a very sensitive way, that he's determined to concentrate his whole self on this person for a few minutes, the soul that he's made, and trying to grasp what this soul is going through, what kind of false ego this soul has, what's preventing him from...
comes from Krishna. Right.
See, Krishna rewards us with this intelligence and this realization and intuition that you definitely have
to
practice.
You don't know unless you go out.
No. That you have to show Krishna, demonstrate to Krishna that you want it. And that requires a lot of austerity on the part of the devotee. It's an austere service in that sense. The taste is so deep when you begin to taste it, and gradually you do. You may get a few glimpses, and then you get more and more, and then gradually you become steadier and steadier. If you remain steady in your attempt to get it, that's what I was telling you girls this morning. But you have to really go for it. And it takes years and years and years to get a steady, solid taste of this from most devotees. It's certainly taken me years. Some devotees are very fortunate and very purified to begin with, and they very quickly get a steady taste. But that's rare. That's very rare. Most of us have to undergo this austerity of approaching the conditioned soul one after another, after another, after another, day after day after day, and learning how to pray. It's not that we pray spontaneously. We have to force ourselves to pray on behalf of the conditioned soul. But it's not that we concentrate spontaneously. Our mind is just like Chaitanya Japa. Our mind goes everywhere. But on the conditioned soul and what we're supposed to be doing out there, trying to engage them. It's such a complete service, and it requires so much concentration. I was giving some examples this morning. It's just like a mother who has a child that's now about 2 years old, which I think is one of the hardest ages you get to, where they're just all over the place, and they're not toilet trained or anything. The mother is just constantly with the child, and the child can't control its senses for a second. And you can't discipline it, you can't yell at it and just tell it what to do. You have to be so clever to actually engage the child in a positive way and get it to do what you want it to do without having a temper tantrum. It's almost like that in a book distribution. You have to actually, they have no control over their senses at all. You can tell them nothing wrong with it. And we have to keep their mind fixed on you and what you're saying to them. And so that means you have to be completely sensitive to their response to you at every second. It isn't that you just preach something you've read out in books or something you've heard in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You yourself have to be totally sensitive to how they're responding to you at every second, so that you can be so quick to change in the slightest, you know, to change your approach, to change your mood, to change your words themselves, to change your emotional, what you're putting on emotionally. All these very simple things affect them. And this comes from practicing, from Krishna empowers us in this way to do these things, so that we can actually hold their attention. The whole thing is to hold their attention. They have no control over it. They have absolutely no control. It's just like they can't. It's just like a small child. They can't control when they go to the bathroom. It's almost that. You know, that's what I think of when I talk to these people. And so we have to help them. So we help them by learning an ongoing some of them in such a way that they don't realize or feel that pressure. That's why it requires some sensitivity. It's an art. It's a great art. Prabhupada said it is. Because we can't make them feel that we're pushing them or in any way controlling them. But factually, we are. For their own good, because they, otherwise they're totally on a suicide path. You could say that we're like paramedics arriving on the scene of a very serious accident where somebody is just about to die. And we know the exact medicine to administer, and we know exactly how to do it. And we just have to be sufficiently detached and determined to step in at the right moments and administer the proper medicine in the right way. We actually have the knowledge. We have everything. We have the expertise comes. And we have to have the desire to do it, you know. We want to save a life. We want to do it. We can't be casual or lazy or spaced out. We have to really have an intense desire to get this experience. And this is the way that you get a very, very intense experience of the presence of the one you're talking with you. In Krishna, in your spiritual master, it's unavoidable to experience their presence intimately there on Sankirtan with you, because you are constantly feeling them empowering you and you're feeling their presence, and you're also praying to them. And you're seeing how they're reciprocating with you. And the things that these conditioned souls, the under the changes the conditioned souls are going through in a certain matter of seconds is so amazing. It's mystical. It's entirely mystical. It has nothing to do with any potency we have on our own, and we can see that immediately. So therefore, it increases our faith and our realization of Krishna unlimitedly. The more we get, the deeper we get into it. I remember the first time I distributed a lot of books was I had that experience in a very deep way. It was a painting weekend and it was flying down in New Jersey, in the New Jersey airport. And somehow or other I was sent there because I wasn't, they didn't think I could, maybe I could do as big as somebody else, so I was sent to that one. And it turned out that it got flogged in all the way around here and I was there all day. And so I was wandering around with my Krishna books and stumbled. For me, that devotee, some kind of ecstasy in me was actually, I wasn't feeling any kind of pride or ambition to distribute a lot of books, actually. What I was feeling was awe at Krishna's potency. I was simply awed by how Krishna could arrange, not that the fact that it was 5 days and these souls couldn't read or anything, but that the books were going out like anything. I think I was doing 7 books that day, which was the biggest that we'd ever done in New York at that time. And it just went on and on day long. Of course, in a similar situation today, we'd probably distribute 500 books. Do you think that's like George and Richard? You have to talk back, because that's all that you know. I'm going to do it.
So, Mother Corey, this is a painting that might be very helpful for all of us to
hear more or less a summary of how you learned to become internally absorbed in Sankirtan, because certainly, as Sri Ramachandra has explained, if one's just on the passionate platform, then it's like a shooting star, it never lasts. And so everyone's thinking, well, this is very important, this internal absorption, if we want to do Sankirtan for the rest of our life, you know, one day a week or whatever it is, then certainly we have to learn how to be internally absorbed and have a consciousness that you will want to do Sankirtan, will understand it, and will you have some realization to keep this going, because otherwise we won't want to go on, and we won't want to actually perform it in the proper way, and we'll have no desire. So I think it would be really nice if you could summarize your in your Krishna conscious life as a Sankirtan devotee, how you learned this.
Well, I've learned a lot from being around other devotees who were internally absorbed, but I think the thing that
for me has been the most the deepest experience for me was when if I wanted to take it on my shelter of Sankirtan and actually see it as a shelter, as a place where I was experiencing my relationship with Krishna because I was praying to Krishna during the whole time or as much of the time as I could remember to pray that I was out there, that it became more and more clear to me that whenever I was on Sankirtan trying to distribute books and preach about Krishna to people, I was safe in the sense that I was with Krishna. I could experience that I was doing the best I could to serve Krishna at that point. And then another thing that I was beginning to experience gradually more and more, which is that
so I'd like to thank all of you for staying here with us. Speak about book distribution, something that was very dear to her. So we want to reward all of you with really a nice ecstatic breakfast. We'll take prasadam right here in the temple room. So what we'll try to do is just put a screen in front of Radha Govinda, and then we'll have everybody just kind of like line up in rows facing each other. All right? So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shishi Radha Govinda ki jai. So bear with us. We'll try to bring everything into the temple room, and then we'll begin serving out.